This is News. Thanks for joining us. It's day 15 of Israel's attacks on the Gaza Strip. The regime has carried out new air raids as the first aid convoy enters the besieged territory from Egypt. The latest strikes targeted the cities of Rafah and Deir al-Bala, leaving 13 people dead. Gaza's health ministry says nearly 4,400 Palestinians have been killed and more than 13,500 have been injured. Over 70% of the victims are children, women, and the elderly. This is the first aid convoy entered the Gaza Strip since the ongoing bombing campaign started on October 7. Israel has ever since imposed a total blockade on the Strip, cutting food, water, electricity, and fuel supplies to the densely populated area. The regime says the aid will go only to southern areas of the Gaza Strip, and it does not include fuel. Humanitarian groups say this initial aid is a drop in the ocean. Hamas says the aid cannot change the catastrophic medical conditions in Gaza. Pakistan has dispatched a humanitarian aid package to the Gaza Strip to provide some relief for the besieged Palestinian population. The move comes as the nation has demonstrated in solidarity for Palestinians on Friday. Our correspondent Nasser Kazmi has more.
Pakistan has dispatched a 100-ton aid package to Gaza, which is reeling from Israel's relentless bombing. The humanitarian assistance includes medicine, tents, and blankets, which has been sent to Egypt through a chartered aircraft late on Thursday. According to Pakistan's Foreign Affairs Ministry, the supplies will then be transferred to the people of Gaza from Egypt.
Israel's actions violate international humanitarian and human rights law. Deliberate attacks against civilian targets constitute war crimes and crimes against humanity. We call for an immediate ceasefire, an end to the siege of Gaza, and the facilitation of humanitarian corridors for unrestricted relief supplies.
Meanwhile, in a show of solidarity with the Palestinian people, Pakistani President Arif Alvi visited the Palestinian embassy in Islamabad and met with its ambassador, Ahmad Jawad Rabbai. The president assured the Palestinian envoy that Islamabad will continue its unconditional moral and diplomatic support for the people of Palestine.
We condemn what the brutalities which are happening in Gaza. We condemn the disproportionate reaction which Israel has always done. We condemn the apartheid which has stood there for the last 30, 40 years. We condemn the fact that people are being brutalized, people are being killed. In fact, the Al-Ahli Hospital in Gaza was demolished and more than 500 people died there.
Meanwhile, protest against Israeli aggression continues in Pakistan as thousands of people took to the streets to condemn the ongoing violence in the Gaza Strip.
Pakistan's decision to help Palestine despite facing international pressures demonstrates its moral commitment to the welfare and self-determination of the Palestinian people. Nasser Kazmi, Islamabad.
The Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has warned against any attempts to displace Palestinians amid Israel's brutal aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip.
We warn of any attempts to displace our people from Gaza, and we also warn of any attempts to expel Palestinians from their homes or displacing them from Jerusalem or the West Bank, because we will not accept displacement and we will remain steadfast on our land no matter the challenges. Ladies and gentlemen, we will not leave. We will not leave. We will not leave, and we will remain on our land.
Abbas made the comments in an address to a peace summit held in the Egyptian capital, Cairo. He said Israeli forces violate every possible humanitarian law by targeting civilians through the aerial bombardment of hospitals, schools, and shelters. The Palestinian president said he demanded a halt to Israeli attacks and the opening of humanitarian corridors from day one. Abbas said that he rejected the idea of killing civilians, adding that his administration is adopting all peaceful and legal means to achieve its national goals. The peace summit in Egypt aims to provide humanitarian assistance to besieged Gaza and bring an immediate end to the Israeli massacre of Palestinians there. The Deputy Secretary General of the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says Palestinians will make the Israeli ground invasion a graveyard for the regime's occupying forces. Sheikh Naim Qassem hailed the surprise operation by Palestinian resistance movement Hamas against the Israeli regime on October 7 as a major heroic movement or achievement. Naim Qassem praised the operation as a nail in the coffin of the Israeli regime, saying that it will remain there until it falls. The Hezbollah official lashed out at Tel Aviv for committing genocide against Palestinians, saying that the Western allies of Israel are complicit in the regime's crimes. Naim Qassam said standing against the Israeli occupying regime is Hezbollah's duty, and the resistance movement will stick to its duty until Al-Quds in the land of Palestine is fully liberated. Let's move to southern Lebanon. Mariam Saleh is our correspondent, who joins us to tell us about the ongoings there. Mariam, what have we witnessed now there at this point?
Well, like usual, basically it was somewhat calm throughout the day except till afternoon. And just now we heard a sound of a bombing, and there was definitely several operations for the resistance against the Israeli posts. And despite the fact that we have sometimes the same post being hit several times by Hezbollah, we still see those operations. Just less than an hour ago, we had an operation facing the area of Yarun, that village, and therefore the Israelis shelled that village. We don't know if there are casualties, but we also know that there was one casualty just today when there was one car that was near the border in the area of Kfar Kila that was targeted directly by Israel, and that led to the martyrdom of the person who was driving that. A young man was martyred today as a result of that shelling. Now, we also know that the Israelis continue to shell the villages that are near the area and adjacent to where basically there are operations. But Hezbollah has also launched operations against the Lebanese-occupied Shabab farms in Kfar Shuba Hills, which basically you can see behind me. Although they are deep in the horizon of the image, still we can, whenever there is some sort of an operation or Israeli shelling in the vicinity, we can see them from here. Of course, Hezbollah has kept that basically ambiguous policy of dealing with the Israelis. First of all, shelling operations in both what they consider Lebanese-occupied land, as well as lands that are considered by Hezbollah as occupied Palestinian lands. And even some areas that have been considered disputed so far, they still continue to launch operations against that area. Now, today we heard, as you said, from Hezbollah's Deputy Secretary General, who also has mentioned that Hezbollah is in the heart of the battle. And that's a question that everyone's asking on a daily basis in the media. Will this spread out? Will this spread out into Lebanon, or will Hezbollah take full part in this war? That is a question that's being asked by everyone, even the Daily Person here in Lebanon. But still, we got the answer today from Sheikh Naim Qassam, his Deputy Secretary General. He said that Hezbollah is in the heart of the battle, and they are at the forefront, as they have been in the past. However, it all depends on what is happening and the developments that we see inside Palestine and the steps that they take. But he did say that I'm going to advise. He said the advice is given to the Israelis and to the U.S., of course, definitely not to go deeper into that war, since the defeat that they witnessed, the defeat that they had been they have witnessed on October 7th was a huge defeat for them. So therefore, he told them, if you do not want to go into a deeper defeat, something that is greater that you will see in the future, which we are eyeing, he said that he's basically foreshadowing the fact that there will be a bigger defeat against the Israelis if they continue. He told them, stop your aggressions. So basically, we have this first piece of advice from Hezbollah's officials stressing to the Israelis that if they stop their aggression now, they won't be defeated as such because they have no choice but defeat, whereas Hezbollah and the resistance have no choice but victory. Of course, and Sheikh Naim Qassam was very outspoken when it came to Hezbollah's support for the Palestinian resistance, and he did stress that any movement or action that the Israelis will take inside Gaza that could curtail a more, let's say, bigger involvement for Hezbollah in this in these clashes, and he said Hezbollah will be in the heart of this battle. He also mentioned something very significant. He said that what is here in South Lebanon, all along the border, we have some two units of the Israeli army. That's huge. And in facing Gaza, you have three units. So had Hezbollah not been busying, basically, the Israelis, trying to keep them busy here in the north, then therefore there would be five units all ready and prepared to go into a ground incursion into Gaza, and any sort of a defeat or a huge a loss or a destruction or attempt to destroy the resistance in Palestine, that is something that is considered a definite red line for Hezbollah's resistance. And he said the resistance bloc in the entire region will not allow this. And this is very much redundant, not only with the fact that we see operations for Hezbollah at the border here in South Lebanon, we're also seeing more operations in Iraq by the Iraqi resistance. We saw the second operation today as they flew a drone near the al-Assad military base for the U.S. And so therefore they are ready, and they have proven that they are ready to target the U.S. presence in the region. Now, this also basically somewhat reflects calls from the leaders of the resistance that have been since January 2020, since the assassination of Commander General, head of the Al-Quds Force, Haj Qasem Soleimani, which they said, and we heard from Hezbollah Secretary General then say that the U.S. presence in Lebanon, in the region, I mean, will be in a descending mode, that they will return home with their coffins. And whether now is the time to realize that promise, it's not clear, but it seems to have begun somewhat. But it all depends, of course, on the developments that take place inside Palestine. But still, throughout, with all this, we still have continuous shelling against civilian areas here in Lebanon. We had just today witnessed the destruction of entire house, a house which is considered a family home for more than one family, actually, for their grandmother and grandfather, but they also have their children have families as well, and they meet in that house. So thank God the family had not gathered. They were not in that house during that time, and this house is not in the outskirts of the village. It's in the heart of that village, and that village is not even a bordering village. So that basically more is a warning that will the Israelis trespass Hezbollah's red lines? Will they go through shelling civilian areas, although Hezbollah has kept to the rules of engagement and has basically controlled this situation, kept the Israelis away, and not allowed them to change the rules of engagement?
Well, we appreciate it. Mariam Sola, correspondent from southern Lebanon. Let's bring in Chris Southhorstel, who's an author and politician, joins us from Berlin in order to get some analysis into this. Chris Southhorstel, welcome to the program. I'd like to get your thoughts on the stance that Germany has taken when it comes to Israel and its unwavering support. I'm looking at some of the statements there here that I'm looking at made by the German foreign minister, but I'm sure that you're probably well aware of that and can tell us what your thoughts are on that.
Let me first thank your correspondent, Mariam Saleh, for a first-class report. Then, secondly, in commenting on our foreign policy is a very, very unhappy story. We had one wise remark by our not very expert foreign affairs minister, Mrs. Baerbock, that she called for humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip. That was the only remark that was somehow prudent. All the other things are radical lining with Israel in this conflict, and Israel is like a terrorist power, oppressing the people since 75 years, occupation since 56 years, Gaza blocking 15 years. What's that? Who among these civilized people can, in fact, side with Israel in this conflict? To me, that's crazy. That is, of course, alienating for the German people. And we see right now demonstrations are forbidden. So that is the full picture. Germany is not a democracy anymore. We are forbidden to carry Palestinian flags, forbidden to take Palestinian gear, cloth, you know, headscarves, things like that. So that is the situation, government siding completely with Israel.
Let's bring in Ali Mala, founding member of Al-Quds Day in Toronto, who joins us in this broadcast. Ali Mala, welcome to the program if we have you. Ali Mala, you know, when you take a look at the situation there on the ground, there's only one thing. We can beat it to the ground, which we quite rightly need to, saying how Israel is vicious in its brutality and against the killing of the Palestinians. But we are not focusing as much as I think it deserves, and your thoughts matter here. The assistance that they have received from the U.S., not only from the past days since the U.S. President Joe Biden landed in Tel Aviv, but also from the beginning of this war, which amounts to anywhere between 4,000 to 5,000 tons of ammunition amongst other military equipment. You know, that clearly spells out the key reason why Palestinians are actually getting massacred. What do you think?
Well, you know, the U.S. and the Western aid for the illegal state of Israel has been going on for, you know, more than five, six decades. Actually, it was established by Western aid, specifically by the British at that time, and then with the support and the backing of the Western government. What is happening in Gaza and Palestine expose the fallacy and the hypocrisy of Western leaders who claim they are in support of human rights and in civil rights, but in fact they are aiding and enabling the aggressor against the indigenous people of Palestine. Sadly, Canada also is joining this chorus of hate oppression against movement and people who are taking a stand in support of Palestine. What is happening in terms of the latest U.S. aid is not something new. And as we all know, the profiteers of war and the military industry was making billions of dollars at the expense of other people's blood and life. So I think what we need to do is to keep mobilizing and exposing those war profiteers and also confronting those Western governments with their unconditional support for the illegal state of Israel.
Thank you, Ali Mala, founding member of Al-Quds Day in Toronto, and Christoph Horstel, author and politician from Berlin. With that, we come to an end for our extended coverage. Thanks for being with us. Bye-bye for now.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The limelight.
European gas prices have surged to six-month high. Mounting fears of energy supply shortages have jolted markets. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT wrote, natural gas futures in Western Europe jumped by a further 5% recently, climbing to the highest level since early April, according to data from the London Intercontinental Exchange, ICE. The cost of gas futures for November delivery at the Tidal Transfer Facility, TTF hub, in the Netherlands surged to an interday high of 56.1 euros, per megawatt hour in household terms during morning trade, or over $617 per 1,000 cubic meters, the highest level in 8 months. Since last week, the continent's benchmark futures prices have jumped by more than 54%. Analysts have also cited the suspected sabotage of a Baltic Sea pipeline between Finland and Estonia, planned workers' strikes at key export plants in Australia, and the approaching winter in Europe. Euronews also wrote, natural gas prices in Europe have been climbing over the past week as recent world events bring uncertainty to the market. European natural gas prices are displaying increased uncertainty, with investors placing higher bets for the upcoming months due to growing concerns about Chevron's operations in the occupied territories and Australia, which are casting a long shadow over the market outlook. European natural gas benchmark Dutch TTF's price was up by more than 10% compared to last week and more than 38% compared to last month as of 11 CET recently. The price for a November 2023 delivery was close to 50 euros per megawatt hour, the highest since April, following a 15% surge amid increasing supply concerns. At the same time, workers at Chevron Corporation liquefied natural gas facilities in Australia were reportedly planning to resume strikes. According to Financial Times, threats of a strike action by Australian workers at liquefied natural gas facilities operated by US major Chevron are also adding to global supply concerns. The dispute has underscored how European prices are increasingly affected by the global LNG market as it weans itself off cheap Russian gas. Workers are in a dispute with Chevron over pay conditions at the Gorgon and Wheatstone facilities, which account for roughly 7% of global LNG supply. Meanwhile, RT wrote, in August, European Commission spokesperson Tim MacPie had called on EU countries to cease purchasing Russian liquefied natural gas LNG and not to enter new contracts for the fuel. The official was answering a question from journalists in Brussels about record growth in the EU of LNG purchases from Russia in 2023. He claimed that even though EU imports of LNG have increased, the bloc's overall natural gas imports from Russia have dropped by around two-thirds since the start of the crisis in Eastern Europe. MacPie noted that the European Union imported 13.5 billion cubic meters of Russian LNG in 2021, with the volume rising to 19.3 BCM last year. The figure surged to a record 10 BCM in the first half of 2023. The EU official said, in terms of our goals, we have a Repower EU plan in place, which includes the goal of getting rid of Russian gas purchases as soon as possible. We urge our countries and companies not to buy natural gas from Russia and not to enter into new contracts when the current ones will run out, adding, we are making significant efforts to stop buying LNG from Russia. According to analysis published by Global Witness recently, the EU bought over half, 52% of the 41.6 million cubic meters of LNG that Russia exported this year. The figure is up from 49% and 39% in 2022 and 2021, respectively. Kepler analyst Adam Bennett told Insider that 90% of Russian LNG flowing into the EU went to Belgium, France, the Netherlands, and Spain. All of them hold contracts that extend far into the next decade, Bennett explained. The EU, which used to import around one-third of Russian pipe gas for its energy needs, has drastically reduced natural gas supplies and banned imports of Russian seaborne oil since the beginning of the conflict in Eastern Europe. LNG, however, has so far gone unsanctioned, despite repeated calls to do so from a number of EU officials.
the ocean of dua.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach towards supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran. And we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil fa. Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing the different effects of supplication. We said, having a look at different verses of the Holy Quran as well as the traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, we understand that there are some functions for the best kind of supplication. What supplication does is that first and foremost, it fills out the gap that exists in the human nature. Secondly, it is something that human beings can rely on, something that fills out the mental gaps, something that brings the human beings grandeur and glory with which they can confront the problems easily. The third effect of supplication was the fact that supplicant will believe in the Almighty Allah, and this accompanied numerous hidden benefits that we sufficiently discussed in the previous episodes. The fourth advantage of supplication is that very self-belief and self-recognition. And regarding this self-belief and self-recognition, we said that in the different verses of the Holy Quran, we have different points regarding this. The verse of the Holy Quran says, وَلَا تُطِعْ مَنْ أَغْفَلْنَا قَلْبَهُ عَنْ ذِكْرِنَا وَاتَّبَعَ هَوَاهُ وَكَانَ أَمْرُهُ فُرُطًا. And do not follow him, whose heart we have made unmindful of our remembrance. And he follows his low desires, and his case is one in which due bounds are exceeded. Elsewhere in the Holy Quran says, اِسْتَحْوَذَ عَلَيْهِمُ الشَّيْطَانِ فَأَنْسَاهُمْ ذِكْرَ اللَّهِ أُولَٰئِكَ حِزْبُ الشَّيْطَانِ أَلَا إِنَّ حِزْبَ الشَّيْطَانِ هُمُ الْخَاسِرُونَ. The Satan has gained the mastery over them. استحفظ عليهم الشيطان فأنساهم ذكر الله. This Satan, this fact caused and made them forget the remembrance of Allah. So they are from the party of Satan. Now surely the Satan's party are the losers. So it is the Holy Quran which has made this prediction and has commanded and invited all human beings to the right path. Udu'u ila sabili rabbik, call to the way of your Lord. Wa anna hadha sirati mustaqima, and know that this is my path, the right one.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, That is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, "Har khujo mushkil javab anjo ravad." Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo kashti ab anjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ab kamju tishnagi avar bedas. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. Ta beju shad ab az bala va pas. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good, about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
So, dear listeners, up to now we have counted four effects for supplication, four advantages. The fifth effect of supplication is that besides the applicant's needs being satisfied, the supplication has yet another effect, another side or aspect of effects that we are mostly ignorant of. Despite the erroneous assumption of those simple-minded individuals who think that if their needs are not satisfied through supplication, through bringing this request to the Almighty Allah, then their supplication is useless. It should be said, however, that the very engagement in supplication, the very fact that we have gotten the chance to engage in supplication, it is of utmost significance. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam in this regard has said, "Alaykum bid-du'a," engage in supplication. فَإِنَّكُمْ لَا تَقَرَّبُونَ إِلَى اللَّهِ بِمِثْلِهِ, because it is the best way through which you come close to God. He also says, مَا يَعْلَمُ عِظَمَ ثَوَابِ الدُّعَاءِ وَتَسْبِيهِ الْعَبْدِ فِيمَا بَيْنَهُ وَبَيْنَ نَفْسِهِ إِلَّا اللَّهُ تَبَارَكَ وَتَعَالَى. No one knows the magnitude of supplication and glorifying Allah when one invokes and glorifies with himself, save Allah. He also stated that no servant raises his hand toward Allah the Almighty unless Allah feels shy to leave it empty. إِلَّا إِسْتَحْيَ اللَّهُ عَزَّ وَجَلْ أَنْ يَرُدَّهَا صِفْرًا حَتَّى يَجْعَلَ فِيهَا مِنْ رَحْمَتِهِ مَا يَشَاءُ. So, it is for this reason that it is said that there is no supplication without being responded to. Why is that so? Because the very engagement is a blessing. It is an advantage that sometimes we're ignorant of. We need to be aware that this chance that we have gotten, this opportunity that is granted to us, it is a very blessing that we must be grateful for. So, when we have this kind of look, with this kind of approach, we do not feel that our supplications are not responded to. At least to some extent, all of our supplications are responded to. In the verse, "Ud'uni astajib lakum," responding is based on delivering the supplication and not on anything else. If supplication takes place, its response is inevitable. Though some supplications do not lead to being answered superficially. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care.
Things always work for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parsetoday.ir/en. In the limelight. The amount of money British households owe their energy suppliers jumped to a record £2.6 billion this summer due to surging wholesale prices and a rising cost of living. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. According to fuel poverty activists, hundreds of thousands of struggling households in the United Kingdom risk missing out on government help to pay their energy bills this winter if they fail to make an application for financial support. National Energy Action said about 800,000 bill payers missed out on an energy bill rebate of £150 last winter through the government's warm home discount after complex changes were made to the scheme. The fuel poverty charity said the changes meant that about 500,000 people were no longer eligible for the scheme despite receiving it in previous years, and a further 300,000 had missed out after being left baffled by the complexity of the new scheme. Peter Smith, a director at National Energy Action, said, "There were hopes that the warm home discount would help all eligible households automatically. While this is the case for some households, the need to apply to your supplier in Scotland or prove you live in a higher energy cost home in England and Wales is creating unnecessary complexity and an unfair postcode lottery." Peter Smith said, "Many vulnerable households were being asked to provide an energy performance certificate, an EPC, as part of their application for government support." He said, "An energy performance certificate, an EPC, can cost over £100 when the rebate is only worth £150 in itself. This is money the poorest people don't have, and too many people just give up hope of being helped. It's so frustrating for them and our advisers. After all, the people who are missing out are paying for the policy through their energy bills but still aren't benefiting. Households are expected to face a difficult winter as a result of the soaring cost of energy. From October, the level of government's energy price gap dropped to £1,834 a year for a typical annual dual-fuel energy bill, from the previous figure of £2,074 a year. However, bill payers are likely to remain under pressure after ministers ended a scheme that automatically paid all households £400 towards their energy bills last winter. In its place, the government claimed it will offer targeted support, including a £900 payment for those on means-tested benefits, £300 for pensioners, and an extra £150 for disabled people. These are in addition to the £150 payment available through the Warm Home Discount. Lisa Pollitt, an energy advisor at National Energy Action, said, "Due to changes to the Warm Home Discount scheme, I have spoken to too many people who can't afford their heating and who have missed out. People who are already saddled with unmanageable energy debts. Every day we're hearing harrowing stories of the cutbacks that these people are being forced to make. It's vital vulnerable households who are still eligible don't miss out on this energy crisis support again this winter." Figures published recently by the Office for National Statistics, the ONS, are expected to show that the headline rate of UK inflation fell slightly to 6.5% in September from 6.7% in August. While a fall in inflation in recent months has been welcomed by policymakers, it still remains well above the Bank of England's official target of 2%, keeping the pressure on households struggling with the rising prices in a prolonged cost-of-living crisis. The Bloomberg News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The amount of money British households owe their energy suppliers jumped to a record £2.6 billion this summer due to surging wholesale prices and the rising cost of living. With the increase in bad debt levels expected to continue, regulator Ofgem said recently it's considering adding a one-time adjustment to the April energy price cap to reduce the risk of suppliers going bust or leaving the market as a result of unrecoverable debt. Proposals under consideration would add an average of £17 to all bills. Claire Moriarty, the chief executive of Citizens Advice, said, "Worryingly, more households are running up energy debt during the warmer months, with some having to borrow money to try and keep the lights on." Claire Moriarty added, "An increase in the price cap to pay for higher debt will make people's bills even more unaffordable." UK energy bills fell slightly in October, but households could still face rising costs in the coming months following the phase-out of government support. Estimates show that one in three homes will pay higher energy bills, putting pressure on the government to do more to help offset the cost of living pressure. Ofgem, the regulator, will now consult industry, consumer groups and the public. There have been calls from lawmakers and energy suppliers for a social tariff to be introduced to lower bills for vulnerable customers. In response, lobby group Energy UK said 14 energy suppliers have pledged to provide immediate assistance to households in debt, including substantial additional financial support. The group is calling on the government to commit to targeted financial support for British households on means-tested and disability benefits this winter. Daniel Portis, Deputy Director at Energy UK, said, "We cannot solve this on our own. Even with every support option that suppliers have to offer, there is potential for many customers to struggle to pay their energy bills." British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered this story and tells us more. Brits were warned recently that they faced the reality of energy bills being as high or worse this winter than last year. Ofgem Chief Executive Jonathan Brearley delivered the stark message as he claimed the industry is fully focused on protecting households. Appearing before MPs in the House of Commons, Ofgem Chief Executive Jonathan Brearley said, "International markets were more stable than in 2022, when households struggled to cope with massive cost increases amid the Ukraine war." But Brearley cautioned that the absence of a huge government support package this winter meant that there was unlikely to be any relief. He told the Energy Security and Net Zero Committee in the House of Commons, "When I look across the market this winter and I think about how does that play out for us this winter, I should start by saying we have a full focus on making sure customers are protected this winter. There is some positive news. The market is more stable, it is less volatile, and prices are lower than this time last year." Jonathan Brearley added, "This time last year, we were anticipating and seeing prices at around £4,200 a year without government support. And last year, government did step in to give tens of billions of pounds support to customers. But," he said, "there is a reality for customers this year. That support is not available anymore. So for many people, their energy bills will be very similar this year and possibly worse for some than they were last year."
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be examining a question which a lot of people ask, and that question is related to a subject which is talked about in ethics and also in jurisprudence, Islamic jurisprudence. That question is, and that topic is, backbiting. Backbiting, what does it mean? Backbiting is when we speak about a person in such a way behind his back, which he would not, which he would not like, us to do. If he were to hear it, he would be upset about it. Not necessarily have to be something false. We could be, speaking about, something true about the person, but he might not like it if he were to, to know about it. For example, it's been narrated that one time, the Prophet was sitting with his wife Aisha in his home, and a woman came to visit the Prophet. She had some work to do with the Prophet, perhaps ask him something or something like that. And when she left, the Prophet's wife Aisha kind of made an indication with her hand that the woman was very short, which was perhaps true. But, she was kind of ridiculing one of her physical features, which was her stature and her height. And the Prophet got upset at this, and he said that you have backbited this woman. Now, the question we want to ask today is this, which a lot of people ask, and that is that in certain situations, if we want to, do something good, certain situations we are forced to speak ill about other people behind their backs. Would this be considered okay? Is it a case of, the lesser of two evils, and therefore it's forgiven, or is it not even considered backbiting? How does this work? The answer to this question is that yes, there are certain situations in which speaking ill about another person behind their back is not considered a sin. In one prophetic hadith, it's been narrated that the Prophet mentioned four types of people whom it's okay to backbite about, or whom it is it's okay to speak ill behind their backs. In some of our previous sessions, we mentioned some of these, like, for example, the tyrant, the unjust and dishonest leader, or the person who doesn't respect other people's mothers or his own mother, and, for example, the person who seeks to rebel and dissent against the Islamic community. These are all people who one is, it's okay to backbite about. One of the categories which we want to kind of elaborate a little bit more about today is this, the category of people who are immoral and who make a public display of their immorality. So this is a person who one is allowed to backbite about. Now, a lot of people might ask, why is this so? Or what is the wisdom behind this, permissibility, this, this allowance of us backbiting him? And in the answer to the question has been given, again, in the form of a prophetic hadith, where the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa sallam said the following: until when will you sidestep talking about the impudent person? So the Prophet actually kind of is encouraging us in this hadith, to backbite about such an immoral person, kind of admonishing us from not speaking ill against him. And then he mentions the wisdom behind it. He says, disgrace him through disclosing his insolent acts so that people may be on their guard against. Thank you for joining us here again. On The Key, we were looking at the people who one is allowed to backbite in the light of the prophetic hadith. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. Israel's onslaught on the besieged Gaza Strip enters its 15th day with nearly 4,400 people killed, most of them women and children. The Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas warns against any attempts to displace Palestinians, saying the people of Palestine will not leave their land. And people around the world take to the streets to condemn Israeli atrocities against the people of Palestine.